The building was completed in April 623, about 7 months after the Hijra. In the northern wall, a stone marked the Qibla, the direction of prayer, orienting the people towards Jerusalem. At first, there was no official summons to Salat, the ritual prayer, but this was obviously unsatisfactory as everybody came at different times. Muhammad thought of using a ram's horn like the Jews or a wooden clapper like the local Christians, but one of the emigrants had an important dream. A man clad in a green cloak had told him that somebody with a loud, resonant voice should announce the service, crying, "Allahu Akbar," God is greater, as a reminder of the Muslim's first priority. Muhammad liked the idea, and Bilal, the former Abyssinian slave with the big voice, was an obvious choice. Every morning, he climbed to the top of the tallest house in the vicinity of the mosque and sat on the rooftop waiting for dawn. Then he would stretch out his arms and before beginning the call would pray, "O God, I praise thee and ask thy help for Quraysh that they may accept thy religion." The Muslims may have changed their Qibla, the direction of their prayer, to Jerusalem, but they had not forgotten Mecca. When Muhammad learned that many of the emigrants were deeply homesick, he prayed, "Lord, make us love this town as much as you made us love Mecca, and even more so." The immense uprooting of the Hijra meant that even though they still used the old tribal terminology, the Muslims had to create an entirely different type of community. One of the first things Muhammad did was set up a system of brothering, whereby each Meccan was assigned an Ansar brother to help Muslims to bond across the lines of kinship. The political separation of emigrants and helpers was soon dropped. When the first of the 12 Ansari overseers died, Muhammad simply took over his position. The Muslims were gradually creating a neo-tribe, which interpreted the old kinship relationships differently. Those who had made the Hijra were to regard themselves as distinct from the Muslims who remained behind in Mecca, even though they all belonged to the same blood group. Whatever their tribe or clan, Muslims must never fight one another. Emigrants and helpers must become as solidly united as any conventional tribe. Like the tribe, the Ummah, the community, was one community to the exclusion of all men and would make confederates of non-Muslim allies in the usual way. As chieftain of the Ummah, Muhammad could now implement his moral and social reforms in a way that had been impossible in Mecca. His goal was to create a society of hilm, of mercy and forbearance. Those who kept the faith, the mu'min, were not simply believers. Their faith must be expressed in practical actions. They must pray, share their wealth, and in matters that concern the community, consult among themselves to preserve the unity of the ummah. If attacked, they could defend themselves, but instead of lashing out in the old, uncontrolled jahili way, they must always be prepared to forgive an injury. Automatic, vengeful retaliation, the cardinal duty of the tribe, could be a great evil. Hence, whoever pardons his foe and makes peace, his reward rests with God, the Quran insisted tirelessly. If one is patient in adversity and forgives, this, behold, is indeed something to set one's heart upon.